listening to Not So Live from Asteroid G, found in a box until some dumb child turned our key. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
And your buddy, is it banging the cymbals in the book? I guess I'm playing the drum over here in the movie. Your buddy Mike the Ghoul here to talk about the monkey, right?
Yeah, that's a fair observation that you made, is I think they changed the instrument that the toy did in the movie versus
the
story.
But funny fact, it's because Disney owns the rights to the cymbal banging monkey from Toy Story 3.
So
at the end of the day, the evil empire comes back to get it.
Well, that makes sense. Which is dumb, but okay. But
it's wild, but it's wild, but it's there.
Still, I kind of feel like the way they wrote the... Okay, we're getting ahead of ourselves. So,
sure.
The monkey is based on a Stephen King short story from Skeleton Crew or something. I'd have to go Night Shift, seasons, one of those.
Right.
And it's about a kid who finds a toy monkey, and when you wind up the toy monkey, it bangs its cymbals, or in the case of the movie, its drum, and someone dies. Yeah. Or something bad happens. Yeah, something bad happens. It's vaguer in the story. It's much more direct in the movie that death is what happens.
Yes.
And as you noted, it's twins in the movie to add more plot to it, because... In fairness, I think the monkey story is like 15 pages, and there's no fucking way to turn that into a movie on its own.
It's an interesting choice to try to pick a Stephen King, short story and extend it into a full movie in one aspect. But I mean, to pick 15 pages of Stephen King is like, what, 3 pages of actual something and 9.5 pages of cocaine? Like,
I mean, Stephen King is so prolific that you could just throw a dart at a book and find something to adapt into something. I tried to watch recently another short story adaptation, Sometimes They Come Back, such a boring movie that I haven't even managed to get through. It's sitting in my Amazon Prime queue, and I'm never certain I'm getting through it to review it for the website. I'm just like, this is an atrocious piece of shit, and that's saying something. Because Stephen King's library has Maximum Overdrive in it, was the wretched piece of shit I couldn't get through.
Maximum Overdrive, it's a fun movie, truck. I mean, every little boy's dream. So, there's some plot there.
I could get through Lawnmower Man, and I can't get through that movie, okay? It's real bad. But anyway, the monkey is not what I expected. Let's start there. And we can debate the vagaries of the plot and so forth, but...
Sure.
I didn't watch the trailer, and I'm not sure the trailer really specified... But from
didn't
what I
give
saw,
you a whole lot.
From what I saw, production stills and everything, it was more mood and so forth, and it looked scary as hell. And the movie isn't. Like, not that I don't think people could be scared by it, but it is definitely a movie where every time it builds you up to a really horrendous scare, it twists for a laugh instead.
That was my main concern with this movie, was what felt like a definite conflict of identity. The parts of the movie were definitely just, they were serious tones going on. There were some things that you were building up, there was suspense, and then something funny happens to just break the whole mood. And it happened constantly in this movie. The deaths were fun. There was some cool stuff in there. There was some over the top wildness, but the confusingness of like, is this a horror movie? Is this a dark comedy? Is this a comedy with elements of horror? Is it just, what is this? It was hard for me to understand. I do appreciate what he tried to do. I think the director does some pretty good work. I think Long Legs was a pretty good movie from what I remember. It just felt confusing at times to me. It just confusing.
See, and I wasn't confused at all. I find this interesting because I didn't have any preconceived notions about what it was. I just knew it's a horror movie called The Monkey. I mean, we discussed this the last time we touched upon horror with Hard Eyes. You tell me there's a horror movie, I'm going to show up. It doesn't fucking matter what it is. Horror? Sure. Okay, let's see if I can get through this. And as long as it's not Sometimes They Come Back, apparently I can. But so I didn't know what it was going in. But that opening, there's an opening scene, and I don't feel like I have to worry about spoiling this because it's the opening
scene. Not at
this
point, It's a Stephen King movie, too, folks. You know what you're getting here.
I didn't know what I was getting going into this, but it's the opening scene. I have no problem spoiling the first third of a movie or stuff that's in a trailer or whatever, but the Adam Scott playing the kid's dad, we pick that up eventually in the first act. He right. goes to sell off to a pawn shop or something this monkey toy. Although, don't call it a toy.
No.
They
no,
emphasize that.
Yes, yes.
And the pawn shop owner, like, is standing there, and the drumstick from the monkey comes down. And then the pawn shop owner gets shot by a statue that's carrying a harpoon.
Yeah, it was like a deep sea diving yeah. like outfit, yeah. like one of them classic ones from like Scooby-Doo with like the yeah. big like face mask and stuff, holding the harpoon gun uh-huh. just goes off.
Yeah, fires straight through him. They both yeah. look down at the harpoon. Then no. the harpoon pulls back for some reason, which I wouldn't have expected.
That's yeah. what they do. It's for yeah. harpoon fishing. That was okay. I appreciated that.
Okay, good. And it yanks his entire intestines out of him like magician scarf style. And
it just keeps coming.
And see, the thing is that I could see why someone would think that's horror. Like, in a yeah. Final Destination movie, that 100% would be horror.
Right.
But the way it's presented with Adam Scott there doing his Adam Scott thing, and just the goofiness of just seeing this, like, long intestine come spiraling out of the dude, I knew instantly it was a comedy. And I was in it. Two kills early in the first act that feel like they were more horror than, or dramatic than comedy.
Sure.
But right. from that point forward, everything that happens is pure comedy. And
that's what I found confusing about it.
I didn't have a problem with it. I enjoyed it. Because that opening scene set mm-hmm. the stage.
True. But then it rolls into your point. They, you know, there's a scene at a restaurant where, you know, something happens to somebody, and it's very like almost Resident Evil-esque. Like you see it just happen, and like the slow line yeah. of blood starts, yeah. and it falls
like the laser
and
room.
You're just like, oh,
yeah.
yes.
Yeah,
and you're
yeah.
like, oh, okay, I knew something was going to happen. That was actually not, I wasn't completely expecting that, but I could tell where this is going.
Okay.
And then the next death, I think you're talking about, of the other family member. Yeah. That's, you know, I don't want to spoil it, but like, that was very like
gruesome.
Where did that come from? Very gruesome. So I'm like, okay, this started kind of funny, a little weird. And then we hit these two deaths in a row. They're like, okay, there's some seriousness to us, and the interaction between the two brothers and how that was going. I'm like, okay, this is really starting to pick up like something really deep and dark. And then it didn't.
I agree, but at the same time, it also set up something very comedic, because the lady at the steakhouse, the Japanese teppanyaki hibachi place, yeah. that death is gruesome, and
yes.
out of nowhere, and a little shocking, but then it immediately cuts to her picture at the funeral.
You know, and the reaction of the priest
and
is
then,
pretty good, too.
And then as soon as the next person dies, like, almost instantly cuts to their picture at the funeral, so that when we get the third person, and it cuts immediately to their picture at a funeral, like, it's got a running gag going. It's rule of three, and it's perfect comedy. Like, I agree, the first two deaths are dramatic to a point, but they're also purposefully setting this like comedic tone in the background as well. Like, I thought it was masterfully done, because it's just so stupidly setting this up without you even realizing. And then once the laughs come, they feel like such a relief.
When this movie was at its best for me is when it was a comedy, and at these actions, like the talking, the dialogue between the uncle, who was the movie's director, Isaac Perkins, and like the kid sitting on the stairs.
I don't
want you here. He's cracking a beer. He's like, we're swingers or whatever. I'm like, this is great. This is great.
No, and I honestly kind of appreciated the uncle for that, because at least he's being honest.
Right?
Didn't lie at all.
But the way he's dressed, it looks like it's 1973, and it's supposed to be like 1999. And he's got like 70s looking glasses. Like, I mean, like, it was very like, it was funny in a way that I was not expecting right there. I love the uncle character for his time in the movie. That's true.
And then the later half of the film, like, it gets to a point that is beyond Final Destination. Like, the kills become so over the top and silly that it is definitely just humorous. Like, it crosses that line twice. It's no longer, even if you were scared before, it is definitely no longer scary anymore.
Yeah, it just became the shock value of like how people are dying. What's this going to look like? Mm-hmm. You know, when the guy who went hunting, again, not too many spoilers, but when they open up the They open up the, I want to say suitcase, sleeping bag. Thank sleeping you, bag.
And he's just basically soup.
I think someone says it looks like like someone threw a cherry pie in there or something. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God.
It was so wrong.
It was so bad. Like, it was, I mean, that's to me when the movie was at its peak. But then there are other elements where, but you know, the interaction between Hal, the one brother, and his son, Petey, like their dynamic, like, I mean, I get it, but like you I've been this recluse for 20 years, but 25 years because of what happened, but like somewhere along the line, you fathered this child that now you don't want to see because you don't want to put them at risk. It's just like it had some serious aspects of it that just seemed weird to me with the way the comedy was playing out when I thought the movie was at its strongest.
Mm-hmm. No, I get you. So here's a thought on this. And there is a fine line, as this movie very well proves, between comedy and horror. And a lot of horror movies, like The Evil Dead, for example, that whole franchise, benefits from using both aspects of that. To build to a scare, sometimes relieve with a laugh. Build to a laugh, sometimes relieve with a scare. Cabin in the Woods is another good example of that.
Yeah.
And like there are times, especially in the climax of Cabin in the Woods, where it's both hideously scary and hideously funny in the exact same moment. And it's it is just cheer-worthy when a film can pull that off. And I think this film illustrates a key dynamic about how you can do that and how you can use serious tone to build to something, to get that tension rolling. And then when you release it with a laugh instead of a scare, it makes the laughs feel a little more depraved, but also very funny. Like, this was a very depraved movie.
Yeah. There was a lot of just, you know, scratching that deepest part of your brain here kind of thing at times, right? Like, just like that itch of that primal kind of that you get, like, real deep down. So I get that.
Yeah.
It was just the tone of the movie that confused me is all.
And, you know, that's the thing is I liked it for what it was. I haven't laughed this uncomfortably at a movie since Fight Club. Okay, and which I think is an absolutely hilarious movie. And when I say that to most people, they're like, wait, you laughed during Fight Club? I go, who doesn't? Okay,
it's funny as shit.
It's funny as hell.
It's hilarious. Yes, it's a very serious movie, it but is. It's funny as hell. It's meant to be.
It's meant to be satire, and I think that's to a certain extent what Osgood Perkins was going for here. He was using the bones of a... I remember the story. A not that interesting Stephen King story. Sure. To make a satirical Final Destination, in essence. You wind the toy, death comes for someone, and then you just wait to see what happens. And it has a different kind of momentum to it than Final Destination, but I won't deny, I saw the trailer for Final Destination Bloodline right before this movie. And I was like, oh, well, these two feel way more connected than I think anyone intended for this to happen. But, like, Final Destination movies are funny despite themselves. And this movie was funny purposefully.
I guess looking back, there was definitely the lean that way. And maybe because, like, of how I saw, like, I did see the trailer. It did not spoil much, so I will give it that. But the trailer made me feel like this was going to be much more darker and much more horror than I got. And maybe that was me for my expectation. And that's cool because, like, the monkey's creepy. My wife pointed out something that just, like, really stuck with me. She was trying to figure out, like, what made the monkey so creepy looking. It's got human teeth, man.
Oh, yeah.
Like that is just, that's bad.
It opens its mouth and it just looks hideous.
Yeah, it looks very similar to the monkey from that really great 1980s movie, Monkey Shines. Very similar, much more modern a little bit, but similar look with everything. And the monkey's creepy as shit, I'll give it that. And the whole like aspect of like this possessed entity that just like causes all this chaos around it, it's been done before. And we've seen it, but this was pretty good. This was pretty good how it was done. You know, I kind of did understand... You know, I, as confusing at times as it was, I understood Hal's drive to like why he was the way he was. The brother, Bill, I get to
a little less developed. I will agree that the brother, who's without spoiling too much, part of the cause of the problem that we have to eventually solve in this movie, he is not as well developed as I would have liked. He's definitely an antagonist, not a protagonist, but. Yes. Like, without spoiling things, when we finally get to a resolution between characters, I don't believe it really felt earned.
Right. Yeah,
and I think that's a weakness of the movie. Osgood Perkins understood. The movie was basically done. And if you drag it out too much, then you're just going to lose what momentum you have, and the audience is going to tune out and so forth. So you want to wrap that up quick. Maybe they wrapped it up a little too quick, but I like that better than spending 20 minutes giving us, like, four Lord of the Rings endings instead.
True, true. Yeah. And at 98 minutes, this was a crisp little 100-minute movie.
It was.
That moved. Yeah, it moved, and it was good. It was a good length. It didn't drag. It ended, like, it made sense where it ended. I got it. You know, it was well done that way, because they could have really tacked on another 15, 20 minutes of some exposition and some other things going on, and they didn't.
Yeah.
So that's a good point to make.
Yeah, and there were plot lines that they set up that they didn't really necessarily pay off. Like,
they never came back to the one from the beginning. I'm like, where'd he go?
Well, it's like the son is going to be adopted by his stepfather. And that would remove all parental rights from our main character. That's set up in the first act. Again, I'm not spoiling anything that is important here. We don't really get necessarily a tied in a bow resolution on that. I think another movie would have decided to tie a bow on that and really let us know, hey, here's what happens to them for the next 20 years or so, whether it's good or bad or whatever. We don't really get that. We don't even know what's going to happen in that thing, which maybe that indicates a sequel, although I don't feel like this movie needs one at all. Maybe 20 years from now, when, like, someone else finds the monkey and we can do this whole shtick again at that point. I have a bad feeling that we'll get a rushed-out sequel at some point because Hollywood saw that this made any money and they're going to want one. But I don't feel like this needs it. But
against a very reasonable budget, too, to make this movie.
Yeah, but it was little things like that. Like, yeah, you're right. Adam Scott's dad shows up at the start of the movie, and then we don't really see him again. We don't get explanation for how he got the toy. It just magically is there, and then we move on with ourselves. So there's things that a different movie or a safer Hollywood movie would have explained. And they definitely would have tried to stick on the tag ending of, here's the sequel, come enjoy the sequel. But we didn't get any of that. On one hand, maybe I want a little more resolution. But at the same time, I appreciate that it didn't decide to try and drag it out.
It's true. It's very true. Because we've seen plenty of circumstances and instances where a movie has dwelled on a plot point that you're like, I don't give a shit about this. So why are we spending 5 to 10 minutes on something I really don't care about? And it didn't do that at times. Like, it didn't latch on to the whole, you know, the stepfather thing. We never found the resolution. You know, Adam Scott, like you said, he's just not there anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, where'd he get it? What happened? You know, there was a couple other points throughout the movie where that happened. But to your point, it didn't dwell on things and it didn't pad the runtime, which is very much what you see in a lot of these other movies. They just spend 5-7 minutes on, like, a plot point or some analogous thing that happens, and then suddenly the time goes from 98 minutes to 2 hours, and you're like, oh shit. I get it.
Yeah, no, I think it works for what it is. I can understand, like, again, like, I understand when some movies, like, don't find the specific audience or the tone that people were expecting. You expected something darker. It didn't exactly play out that way. It threw you off. We can point to Hard Eyes, which we both watched, and we at least agreed more about how that movie was, but there were plenty of people that went and saw it initially and they just hated it because it was too rom-com and not enough slasher. There's been movies like that way back in the day. When I went to see Mystery Men for the first time, I was expecting an uproarious superhero comedy because that's what the trailer promised. And it has its comedy. It is definitely a comedy, but it's much more almost mumblecore in the way it's done. Like, early mumblecore, before that was even really a genre, you could tell that they were improvising lines and feeling their way through, like, a very low-key kind of comedy while telling basically a parody of, like, the Batman and Robin style superhero film before that was even really ingrained in the consciousness of people. So yeah, no, I can understand how, like, a movie like this wouldn't hit for you in a certain way. So I think this is maybe something where you go back in, like, 2 or 3 years remembering that it's actually a comedy and try it again.
It's funny you mentioned that, because you mentioned Mystery Men, and that's a movie that I have grown to love.
Oh, I love that movie now. Yeah.
Every bit of it. And the first time I watched it, I did have that feeling of confusion about, like, this is not the movie I was expecting.
No, yeah, absolutely.
And I appreciate that so much more now, on the tones in the movie and the characters in the movie and the interactions in the movie, that I could see that being the case with a movie like this.
And
I could.
I think that's the reason why that movie, not to make this a Mystery Men podcast instead of The Monkey, but I think that's the reason why that movie flopped at the time and why it's only found its audience later. It was not successful then, but it's, like, beloved now. And I think for anyone that didn't like The Monkey, to bring it back around, look at that, a nice segue. The first time, if they're actually willing to go and watch it again, I think they'll, knowing what it's supposed to be, they'll like it better.
I believe that's probably a very good point. Like, the, going into this with a different expectation, I think the second time around, it will make me appreciate things more. That happens quite a bit with movies. You're correct.
Yeah. Trailers don't sell what they're actually trying to sell, which I guess is better than trailers overselling the entire story before you even get to see the movie.
So, yeah. I don't know. We'll see. There was some fun little comedic things in this movie that I did enjoy at the end, too. Like, you know, the reconciliation and then the quick snap after that. Yep. And, you know, and the thing that did it was the mother's bowling ball. And I was like, well, that's funny.
Yeah.
So, like, there's a lot little things like that. There's a lot of little things.
I was surprised that she wasn't in the movie more, just because Tatiana Maslany is, like, a decently known actress at this point. She was in She-Hulk. She was in Orphan Black. Like, I appreciate that they made her a star and then limited her time in the movie so that we could be surprised by when she showed up. But it was still a little weird.
She did feel a little underutilized. I know that she must have enjoyed the project, though, and working with Osgood Perkins, because she has signed on to be part of his next movie already. So we're going to get some more her and Osgood Perkins, which I'm here for, because she was probably my favorite character in the movie, aside from the uncle. Like, those two were great. Like, I thought they were fantastic. Well, you know, I thought she was well written.
It's no offense to Theo James, who was definitely doing better work here than he ever got to do over in the fucking, like, Divergent series or anything.
True. Thank you. That's what he's from. I could not remember what he was from. It was from those terrible Divergent movies.
You know, we could do a podcast about those at some point. I'm just going to be honest with you. I didn't think they were as bad as, like, especially as this series progressed, as other people thought. That first movie's pretty atrocious, but yeah.
And you should do that, and we should do Maze Runner at some point, too, because those movies I thought improved as they went along. You know, I thought they did. That's the opposite effect. Yeah. But we're tangenting again, so back on
that happens. That's just what this podcast is. It's not so live from Tangent G is what this fucking podcast is.
Right?
Anyway, no, I liked The Monkey. I thought it was one of the better Stephen King adaptations, which isn't really a high bar, because as we've established, Lawnmower Man, and sometimes they come back. But,
I mean, you know, for every Cujo and It you get a dozen other of these Stephen King movies that make absolutely no sense. And then you get, like, Dark Tower, and you're like, wow, life is even worse than I was 2 hours ago.
It Chapter 2, which was so bad.
I'm disappointed. I am.
Right.
Yeah, I am. I had such high hopes.
Because the first half was so fucking good. Honestly, kind of feel like they should have stopped it with just the first half.
You know, and then that was the issue with the made-for-TV movie, too. The made-for-TV movie was as strongest when it was on the kid characters. And I thought, like, there's no way they're going to make the same mistake again. This is going to be great. And even the good actors in that movie couldn't save how bad it was.
They didn't make the same mistakes. They made other ones that were even worse.
A whole bunch of different ones.
I have a feeling we need to do an It podcast at some point.
We do. I'm surprised we haven't. We'll definitely do that. We'll do an It double feature.
Watch both of those and then movie night that. Yeah, I mean, down with that.
Yes, definitely.
This has been Not So Live from Asteroid G, like a drumming monkey in the bottom of the sewer. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
And your buddy Mike the Ghoul going to go and try to find his long-lost papa who flies an airplane somewhere far away.
Far the fuck away from that toy. We will see you all next time.